lazy days of summer have arrived, and with them, the opportunity to travel and see new places.
Maybe you're headed abroad to Paris, the City of Lights, and home of the 2024 Olympics. Or perhaps your journeys are taking you south of the equator to Peru for an epic hike to Machu Picchu, or to Bolivia to see the salt flats of Uyuni.
Or maybe like us, you're finding your travels are closer to home on the trails of a national park, like Mount Rainier, Shenandoah, or Yosemite.
From hikes to hotels to the best spots to eat, Moon Travel has you covered.
From excellent first-hand experience from authors who are local to the areas they are writing about, to wonderful maps and great recommendations, Moon Travel Guides give the reader so much more than other travel guides on the market.
That's right, and we are so excited that this year we are again partnering with Moon Travel.
Through this partnership, through the end of 2024, our listeners can get 20% off any Moon Travel Guide when they use the code GAZE24 at checkout.
That's code GAZE24, GAZE24, for 20% off any Moon Travel Guide in Moon's entire library, and you actually will not find this deal anywhere else, everybody. Head to our show notes to check it out and see Moon's entire collection of guidebooks.
So ready to cross something off your travel bucket list in 2024?
Have a lot of great ideas for trips, but don't know how to get started or keep your itinerary organized?
Wherever your wanderings may take you or inspire you to go, Moon Travel Guides have you covered.
Head to moon.com and use code GAZE24 at checkout to open up the world of possibilities for your next trip.
Moon Travel, let your heart be your compass, let Moon be your guide.
This episode of Gaze at the National Parks is sponsored by Moon Travel Guides.
Moon Travel is the travel guidebook publisher for ethical travel. Don't spend months trying to build the perfect trip when you can do it all with Moon.
Whether you are taking a short road trip, exploring a European city, heading to a national park, or traveling to South America, Asia, or beyond, make sure to pack a Moon Travel Guide with you. Hello and welcome to Trail Mix by Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast. I'm Dusty.
And I'm Mike. While our long format episodes explore one hiking trail and one national park, one park at a time, Trail Mix is the short format episodes of our show. It's where we get to explore topics we didn't get to cover in our long format episodes, including history, science, environmental justice, and also interviews.
Today's Trail Mix is a very special interview with Josh Berman, the author of Moon, Colorado Hiking, and Moon, Colorado Camping.
Based in Colorado, Josh is a writer, teacher, and outdoor expert with decades of experience exploring the state, often on assignment for the Denver Post.
Josh's depth of knowledge about Colorado and its different hiking biomes and camping frontiers makes him a cut above the rest when it comes to writing on the subject.
An avid hiker and camper who loves to explore his now home state, Josh's writing has appeared in the New York Times, National Geographic Traveler, and Yoga Journal. As an experienced traveler, Josh has written on a multitude of other topics and areas in 7 published books.
We were so excited to chat about all things Colorado with Josh and to hear more about the wonderful landscapes outside of the national parks and everything else Colorado has to offer. Well, we are thrilled today because we have with us a very special guest, and that is Joshua Berman, who wrote the Moon Travel Guide to Colorado Hiking. Welcome to the show, Josh. We're thrilled that you're here.
Thank you so much for having me. I love to talk about hiking.
Well, we love to do the same. So, yeah. Perfect. Interview, great. It's wonderful already. So, Josh, Colorado's home base, has that always been the case for you, or have you lived elsewhere in the States? And I guess my curiosity is, if Colorado is home base, how was hiking kind of like infused throughout your youth? And, you know, how did that kind of come into play? And if you're from elsewhere, how did you end up in Colorado, and how did like maybe your experiences out in nature lead you to kind of where you are here with having created this book?
Sure. I have been in this past stint living and camping and hiking in Colorado for about the past 18 years or so, and I was born in West Virginia, so I'll go back there. Born in Clarksburg, West Virginia. My first experiences hiking, camping were in the area around Cheat Lake, which is near the Pennsylvania border. I went to camp there, and those were my first backpacking trips and hiking trips, and at this camp, Emma Kaufman Camp, outside of Morgantown, West Virginia. I grew up there, and then eventually my family moved to New York. and went to school in the Northeast, where I discovered the White Mountains and started. When I was 18, my high school graduation gift was a 9-day Outward Bound backpacking trip with Hurricane Island Outward Bound School. So I went hiking with a group on the Appalachian Trail between New Hampshire and Maine, and then that really got me hooked. And from there, it was kind of off to the races. I spent a lot of time traveling around the country, working seasonally, doing the Peace Corps in Nicaragua, spent a lot of time in Central America. And that's the part of the story where I became a writer, because I wrote the first guidebook to Nicaragua with my co-author Randy Wood. That was in 2001 after our Peace Corps service there. So immediately I had been learning about magazines, but now I was a travel writer, and I had a niche. I was the Nicaragua guy. And that niche expanded through other parts of Central America as I wrote some books about Belize and the Mundo Maya. Eventually settled back in Colorado, met a woman from Colorado. We got married. We traveled for a while too around the world, and then came back to Colorado. And here we are. But during that time, as my travel writing progressed, my publisher offered me Moon Colorado Camping a few years ago. I said, oh, that sounds like a good gig, and fun research. And I've got three daughters, so we are starting to take our family around the state. And this was a great excuse to go off and study the campgrounds. And then 2 years ago, they offered me Colorado hiking, and I took that too. So yeah, my expertise, my niche has shifted from Central America travel to the outdoors in Colorado, where I write regularly for other publications as well, for the Denver Post, for Elevation Outdoors, on all kinds of outdoor beats, hiking, camping, access to the outdoors, and other related issues.
We could just spend the entire podcast talking about Central America and the White Mountains, because you said buzzwords there for us. The White Mountains were definitely some of our favorite national forest land in the Northeast, both being from out here, Dusty from originally from Mississippi, now New Jersey as well. We had a great trip there. And so talk about a special place that can't believe it's not a national park because of how incredible it is. What an incredible wealth of knowledge that you come with. So it makes a lot of sense that transitioned really well, everything you did in South America, into where you currently live, as you know, being sort of like the expert in the field there, and having opportunity to be able to sort of explore gave you even more leeway to just get better and better at knowing more and more about Colorado.
Yeah, and I think the teacher part of it, you know, I've been a teacher for 16 years, and that definitely the timing of that schedule and that calendar has been really instrumental in that too, to be able to take an entire summer to go off and do a massive project to cover every corner of the state for an article or a book, and often to be able to take my family along and they get to experience that too. So it's constant discovery that and even with all that, I still feel like I've barely scratched the surface in Colorado. There's just so much and so many miles of trail.
When you do a trail for the first time, which I imagine in Colorado, since you've done so many, and there are so many in the book, well, I guess I'm wondering, are there still trails you're discovering in Colorado? Do you feel like you've done all of them? And then my follow-up question to that was, what are immediately the first things you notice when you do a trail for the first time?
Yeah, starting with the book, the scope of the book is there are 75 day hikes. They're between 2 miles long and 12 miles long, and they're all over the state. And the idea was to get kind of an easy, medium, and difficult for each major hiking region around the state. So that the curation of these trails was pretty interesting. I had to rely on a lot of local expertise. I would contact people in Durango or Steamboat or, you know, just the different my contacts with the Forest Service or different guide services, and just get people's opinions. You know, what trail would you include? What trail wouldn't you include? You know, which ones are just too hammered and don't need the attention, and which ones should go in there? And so that whole process was really fun and a huge part of writing it. You know, there was selecting the trails, then there was getting out and doing them, and then there was coming back and writing them all up and keeping track of all the data.
What are the first things you notice on a trail when you do it for the first time?
I guess, well, one, having an idea of what kind of elevation gain or loss I'm going to start out with, and maybe planning that arc in my head and knowing how fast to start. But Yeah, the gym. First, there's that general sense of which biome are you in? Are you in the desert? Are you in a canyon? Are you above tree line? And that larger picture kind of, I guess, prepares you for what's coming. And I always, yeah, you notice the weather, for one, for the safety reasons. Is there anything rolling in? But apart from that, I'm looking for, I don't know, I'm trying to think in my mind. I just see that clear cut trail that, you know, that's going, that's disappearing up the canyon, and just knowing I'm going up there and I don't know what's around that bend, that always just grabs me right from the trailhead.
What's been one of your biggest surprise experiences hiking within the state? Like an experience that was either just sort of like unforgettable because of what happened, or like a complete landscape shift. Like we have talked about like parks like Bryce Canyon before in Utah, where you turn a corner and all of a sudden it's a completely different world. Have you had experiences like that? And what is one that like really sticks out in your mind as something that's kind of that like wow factor hike?
I've got two ways I want to answer the question. One is that I know exactly the feeling you're talking about when you round that corner and everything changes and just blasts wide open. And I've had that a number of times, but what immediately I remember is a section of the Colorado Trail, which I've only done part of. I've done about 150 miles of this 467-mile total trail from Denver to Durango. I hiked the first six sections of it with a buddy who was going all the way. And there was a section coming over Kenosha Pass where it was like every 3 hours you would have the most stunning, you know, just really thick aspen with big views. And then you would turn a corner and there would be the whole Continental Divide shooting off. And then kind of descend down into that forest and then come up. And then there's a whole other, like, and there's such a dopamine hit for each of those that just keeps you going. I was really surprised at how impressive some of those big changes were on that trail, and that trail in general. I mean, that's a whole other story, the Colorado Trail, but it's something, yeah, I think I want to go back and try to fill in some of the sections there.
Yeah, I'd imagine with something that is that long, that does it round? Does it go basically, you know, around the state? Is that the way the trail set up?
It kind of snakes its way down the, it overlaps with the Continental Divide Trail for, I think, a couple hundred miles. And it goes through, has some really, really remote stuff through the San Juans, and hits, I think it's 8 national parks. And a bunch of wilderness areas, or not national park, national forests, and some wilderness areas. And yeah, and you know, I would love one day to be able to have the time to through hike it. In the meantime, I'll take sections. That's fine.
That's incredible. And I'm sure just with something that's that vast, how could the landscape not change so dramatically? And that's got to be such a, like you said, a dopamine hit to be able to see things just shift so rapidly, and rapidly in the grand scheme of how long that trail is. Like you said, every 3 hours. Things were kind of changing.
Or the other, you know, angle to that was, what were some of the things that surprised me, or the big wow factor? And on the biggest level, I hiked these 75 trails in about 8 months, during which time I was also teaching full time and parenting full time. So it you know, but having some of those breaks with the teaching schedule allowed me to go off and get them done. But it really did give me a perspective to see that many trails in that amount of time. And one thing that really blew me away was how blown away I actually was, how impressed I actually was with each trail. I thought I would, you thought you've seen them all, and every single one of them was stunning in its own way and had its own story, and, you know, and then my own story with it. So, yeah. So I was kind of surprised at how surprised I was, just how different and incredible they all were.
But that's wonderful. Obviously, this is an assignment. Obviously, it's work, but it's incredibly enjoyable work. You're also continually surprised by the, you know, terrain, the trail itself. It's kind of like teaching in that way, where every day is, even though you're doing the same job, every day is a different kind of like experience. And it sounds kind of like that, just maybe a little quieter.
Yep.
I would like to zoom in on one of your hikes in the book that we have all done, which is one of our favorite hikes of all time, and that is the Petroglyph Point Trail in Mesa Verde. You listed as one of the like top hikes to do in the fall. It's also listed as a top experience. We talk about it in episode 46 of our show, which was in season 2. We're now in season 6. That feels like a million years ago.
It does. It feels like forever ago.
But we love this trail, and we want to hear, we're curious to hear from you. What is it that you love about this trail?
I love the, there's this really visceral kind of mystery to that place that you feel. As you're beginning that trail, you're looking across the top of the canyon at one of the most impressive cliff dwellings. I think it's Cliff Palace. So you're as you're descending into the canyon, you're having this view of these dwellings, and you can't help but just imagine the people there surviving, and then you're going down and then coming back up, and you get a little work in, and then the trail starts hugging the side of the cliffs that start overhanging. And then, and as you're going up, and it's a good physical hike, there are some hard sections, like short but steep sections, but then there, boom, like talk about around the corner, and then there's like a carved out rock where they would sharpen some of their tools on, or there is a little mini dwelling in the corner that's chained off with just one chain to protect it. But again, like it's like one little clue after another, and then there's this grand finale at the petroglyph point of this just big face of images and drawings that blow your mind in a really deep way. So that, like that trail, yeah, it's kind of in its own class when you're feeling that sense of time there. That you don't get on a lot of other trails.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite things about that, you know, the whole experience of being underneath that cliff, but then coming up and being on top, it's such a flip for the senses too, because you're basically in shade, you know, most of the time. Then you're up top and you're like, oh wait, I'm on top of everything that I just did. And it's kind of cool to be able to experience the same kind of distance and the same pathway, but just in a different way, like one level up. That's what I really liked about
that. And this gives you time to kind of process it, previous part too, as you kind of loops you back toward the whole parking area.
We've spent time in all four of the, you know, big 63 national parks in Colorado. I think probably when I think about Colorado, even when I was looking at your book, I was like, oh, I think of the mountains, and the whole eastern side of Colorado is plains. And I guess I didn't really think about that in the grand scheme of things. I feel like probably most people, when they think about hiking in Colorado, think about hiking in the Rockies or hiking in some sort of mountainous region. Obviously, we did Great Sand Dunes, you know, obviously Black Canyon was its own sort of animal, and Mesa Verde is its own as well. I guess my curiosity is, what can you recommend for the eastern side of the state, which probably maybe most people don't really think about or tread toward?
Most people don't think about it. Most people won't go there. And that's one of the number one reasons to go to some of these areas, these national, and most of the spots are in or around the national grasslands. We've got the Pawnee National Grasslands and the Comanche National Grasslands in the southeast. And it's so different. But the highlights are Pawnee Buttes, which is northeast of Fort Collins. It's only a few hours north of Denver, but it is east, and it's really, the trailhead's so remote. It's like 55 miles from the nearest gas station. And of course, out of all 75 trails, that's the one trailhead that I pulled up to. I was the only car in the parking lot. It was in the evening, and I opened my door and I hear sss, and it was air going out of my tire.
And oh, no.
There was one bar, and I was able to get AAA, and I was able to get my spare was flat, but a guy came out, took him almost 2 hours. So I went and did the hike as the sun was setting and kind of raced back to meet the tow truck guy. But I got the hike done at sunset. Most of the hikes were a lot of them were done at sunrise, but this one in particular was sunset. I was planning the camp at the trailhead. It's one of the only areas where there's easy dispersed free camping right around that trailhead and in the backcountry there as well. That area, yeah, I would avoid that at the heat of the day or the heat of the summer. But that's out there. And then toward the southeast, you've got, Bent's Old Fort National Historic Site has a 2-mile trail going around a lake and around the fort. And the fort is this recreation of a 1840s fur trading post, and to the point where the Rangers are dressed in period garb and playing characters from the 1840s. And it's an amazing experience to go inside the fort and do that after the hike there. So that's a great one. That's in La Junta in eastern Colorado. And there's campgrounds around there, and there's simple hotels around there. And it's quite different from the mountain towns. And there's some other spots down there too. There's dinosaur tracks that I haven't seen in Picture Canyon. There's some other petroglyphs, but the ones that I saw out east are really in, unfortunately, vandalized, especially compared to the ones that are protected in the national park. And it's to the point where it's hard to tell what's ancient and what's graffiti. So, but yeah, heading east is counterintuitive in Colorado, but there's some definite rewards for that.
During the months of May and June, we are highlighting the work of LGBT plus outdoors in our community effort to showcase organizations who are working towards social justice, environmental action, and more inclusive public lands.
LGBT plus outdoors' mission is all about connecting members of the LGBTQ plus community through the outdoors, strengthening the ties of the community, and fostering a love of the outdoors while doing so.
Along with creating community among queer outdoor adventure seekers, LGBT plus outdoors seeks to break down stereotypes and remove barriers for the LGBTQ plus community in what is traditionally a heteronormative outdoor industry. LGBT plus outdoors is committed to not only this, but sustainability practices in the outdoors, including environmental stewardship, inclusivity and accessibility, and collaborative partnerships.
Make monthly charitable giving a trend in your life in 2024 and help to support LGBT plus outdoors this May and June. Visit the link in our Instagram bio for more information.
Or go to www.lgbtoutdoors.com/donation form. So I was very excited to see in your book, you have like a whole section on trails near alpine lakes. And I was just curious if you had one that was a particular favorite.
There's some real gems, definitely. As far as the book goes, we did a hike, some buddies and I went up to Deluge Lake, which is out of Vail Valley. And it was really steep. It was straight up. I'm thinking it was something like 2,000 or 3,000 feet up, but you as you get up and then it levels out a little bit and you pass one lake and then get up to Deluge Lake, and where it's just, you know, right at tree line, so just really stark, sharp, jagged peaks coming up out of that. And yeah, and then just the temptation to jump in, and sometimes I've done it and sometimes I don't, but there's nothing better. Yeah, even if you're just splashing that water on your head and letting it dry. But that Deluge Lake is a really nice one.
When we went to Rocky Mountain National Park, we failed to do enough research to understand that it was a park with two sides and that the connecting road is only open in the summer. We ended up with accommodations in Grand Lake rather than Estes Park. So we stayed in Grand Lake, had to drive down and around to get to Estes Park, to hike in Estes Park. But while we were in Grand Lake, we did a lot of snowshoe hiking. And it was so much fun and so exhausting. And I'm curious if you have also a trail from the book that you love specifically for snowshoe hiking.
Yes, there's one up by Echo Lake, and the hike in the book goes, it's the trail to the Chicago Lake Basin, which is a little bit higher up. I didn't get it that high, but just going around Echo Lake, you can go out and back as far as you want, and it's decent snow. Like, I've done it with a group with snowshoes. We didn't get that far, but you can go quite a ways there. That's up the road that goes to, it's now Mount Blue Sky. It's formerly Mount Evans. And it's one of the two 14ers that you can drive all the way to the top of. But in the winter, that you can't get to the summit, but the road usually closes right there, the trailhead for Echo Lake, where you can go snowshoeing. So that's one good spot. Another is there, and then a number of the flat flatter trails. A lot of people go snowshoeing national park, both sides. There's definitely some flatter trails that are nice, where you can go up to one of those small lakes around the Bear Lake. In the book, I cover the Lulu City Trail, which is on the west side of the park. I would imagine that'd be pretty good in winter too. It's pretty flat up along the headwaters of the Colorado River to a non-existent mining town that was called Lulu City. There's nothing there. But there's a restaurant in Grandview that has a Lulu City burger. So that was what got paired with that hike.
Right, because there's also tips and tricks on beer and food within the book too. So it's not just hiking. There's breweries, there's a little bit of everything.
The subtitle to the book is Best Hikes Plus Beer, Bites, and Campgrounds Nearby. So every trail is paired with a breakfast burrito, a brewery, a distillery, some of them with hot springs. The original idea was something like, I think it was going to be Hikes, Bites, and Brews. And then it expanded into this. But yeah, that was some fun research too.
Yeah, we definitely enjoyed some hot springs times while we were in Colorado. So that is definitely something good to note that's in the book.
And something that I really like is that you have like a whole section of like, here are a whole bunch of hikes that are near hot springs, which is like, that's so great because, I mean, everybody who asks us about going to Colorado and hiking, we're like, hike and then go get into hot springs somewhere, because it will just rejuvenate your body and you will feel so great at the end of it. And like, you have that to look forward to at the end of it. So I love that there's like a whole section of like, these are all trails near hot springs, everybody. Just like, we've laid it out for you.
There's nothing better, yeah, than to hike all day. Or some of these places too, you can ski all day and then get in the hot springs. But the natural way to plan a trip around Colorado is either national park to national park, because that gets you to most of the main corners. And then there's also a historic hot spring loop that is roughly the same shape, but you know, there's five or six major hot springs and then minor ones through that. And I once did an article in summer of covering that. We spent 30 days traveling that last. So it's incredible to be able to pair those things.
That's good to know. Very good to know.
That will be our next trek through Colorado, is doing the hot springs loop for certain.
I am curious about, because this is something that has to be constantly in play, and especially because I feel like you guys had a very strange winter, right? You didn't have much snow and then all of a sudden got hammered, like depending, I guess, on where you are. But weather has to be such an incredible factor here. So what's your typical hiking season? Like what would it typically be when weather isn't odd? And like, how do you factor in for... Like, I guess I noticed in the back of the book, I loved all the hiking tips that are there. Like, how do you factor that in? You obviously said one of the first things you look at on, you know, when you get on a trail is like, what's the weather looking like? I'd imagine being in a mountainous region, that can change pretty quickly because the mountains are going to do what the mountains want to do.
Yeah, it's definitely a major concern. As far as hiking season, I hike year round. I'm here on the Front Range. I'm in Longmont, Colorado, which is less than an hour north of Denver, 20 minutes north of Boulder. And it's very common for us to get dumped on by snow and then get 60 degrees of sun and melt it all away. So some of the trails are clear through a lot of the year. And then when they're not, everybody here has some kind of traction yak tracks or some spikes or whatever to put on your boots and just get going up get higher elevation. It's could be another story. If the snow is too deep, you'll need snowshoes. But a lot of times it's just kind of icy, chunky trail, and you could do it. You can even, you know, some people even will hike 14ers in winter. And just having the right footwear and knowledge, you know, then you have to add in some of the backcountry avalanche knowledge to that. But yeah, then the main standard season is the snow melts from the higher elevations at different times of year. You know, often there's snow through May and June at a lot of the higher spots, so being prepared for that. And then the main thing as far as the daily weather goes is that afternoon thunderstorm, if you're above tree line, can be a dangerous situation. So it's one of the reasons why I really, really try to promote sunrise hikes, because you eliminate so many headaches that can be associated from the crowds to parking to the heat, and then also, of course, the weather, because it's usually afternoon that those storms can put people exposed situations. But if you get up early, you get all those benefits, and there's no rattlesnakes. It's not hot, and of course, you can go get that amazing breakfast burrito.
There it is. One of our mottos is hike early and hike often. So you just continue to, you know, you absolutely put that exactly in your own words. Get out there early and avoid rattlesnakes.
Right. And we're big fans of finding parking. We like to be able to find parking. So it's like, you know, if we get out there at 5 a.m., we're going to find parking. And so that's, so we tend to get out there pretty early.
I love being the first car in the lot and hiking out when it's mayhem. You're just leaving by everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And you're like, I get to leave this chaos.
Exactly.
You just need the right kind of friends for that. Who are willing to get up in the dark.
Yep, it's true. Or, you know, willing to force your friends to get up in the dark.
Or your daughters.
Yeah. So clearly, you know, they're just like any, you know, you could talk about any state, you know, especially a Western state. And there is just a bounty of resources, you know, hiking, what, you know, adventuring, you know, what have you out, especially in Colorado. Say you're a first-time person, never been to the state, but have hiked, you're interested in coming out. What would you recommend? Like, let's say someone had, like, I don't know, 2 weeks. Like, what would be a good, just like, base-level itinerary that would allow people, or just like some, even just ideas, that would allow people to really see a lot of the state and then, like, experience a lot of the terrain?
Great question, and I definitely would recommend planning the first few days in and around either Denver or any of the other Front Range towns. So Boulder, Fort Collins to the north, or Colorado Springs, Pueblo to the south, and being based on that, you know, you're 5,000 something feet above sea level there, spending a few days making sure you're feeling all right with that, and then planning the next phase would either be it's going to be to pop up into the mountains, and it's a question of where. So another big factor is weekdays versus weekends. And again, as a teacher, I have the luxury of being able to hike on weekdays at the more crowded spots over the summer. Trying to plan, you know, if you're going to plan the national park visits, aim for weekdays if possible. Rocky Mountains, the closest to Denver, so would start there. Other ways to do it would be to cut across the state on I-70, which cuts across the central mountain areas and through the Continental Divide. And you could stop at any number of places there. Then find like a base camp in one of the mountain towns where you're going to stay for a few days. There's some wonderful places to stay if you're not camping. There's this kind of trend of turning. Well, one, there's really interesting campgrounds out there with like wall tents and canvas tents and glamping, staying in old vintage trailers or Conestoga wagons. There's all kinds of full service campgrounds that have, you know, fun ways to do it. But there's also those old motels on the edge of town that were kind of getting run into the ground. There's these different companies have come in and turned those into these little like kind of adventure pod, hostel style places to stay, where everyone who's staying there is in between hiking adventures or biking, and there's really cool community. There's some cool places like that around Silverthorne, Breckenridge, and the different mountain towns. So I recommend, you know, picking one of those towns, doing a few more hikes from there, and then again just kind of bumping along and maybe picking a national park or a hot springs. Glenwood Hot Springs is right on I-70. That's a great spot to stop. And there's some really famous hiking around there, like Hanging Lake, which is now really, really well regulated with the timed entry. Same with Maroon Bells up by Aspen, which I used to avoid those really famous, iconic places because I had heard horror stories of the crowds. But then they put in those timed entry systems, which work really, really well. And that was another thing I discovered during was trying out some of those really popular ones, but that were well regulated. I hadn't done that before, where you buy a ticket to enter the hike at 6:15 a.m. for Hanging Lake, and they allow 55 people per hour in. So it's a really nicely metered and enjoyable. And yeah, so that's how I would roughly work a 2 week thing, you know. And again, you could pick, you know, the lesser known national parks. It's going to be Great Sand Dunes or Black Canyon, the Gunnison. I mean, for those, or there's so many ways to do it. Again, like I feel even after this extensive research, I felt like at all of these trailheads, I would do the day hike and come back. But part of me was like, I wanted to keep going. This is just like the gateway to some really, really incredible wilderness areas that I discovered at least another 12 or 15 places that, you know, that are now on my list to go back and go a little bit deeper into.
I'm curious about what are some of the things that you did in Black Canyon of the Gunnison? Because we did one of the wilderness routes, and it was unexpectedly an epic adventure for us, mostly because we got lost, but it was a lot of fun. But I'm curious what your experience was like there.
I created a loop out of some of those trails that kind of, well, one of them dips down a little bit into the canyon, but then, yeah, I saw the trails that continued down into the wilderness areas, and didn't go. It looked really steep. I've never been down to the bottom there. So
it's great.
I'm curious. did you spend a night down there in the backcountry?
No, we just did it.
We did not spend a night, but to say that it was steep is, understatement of the year. Uh-huh. It was also very hot that day, and it was obviously hotter in the canyon, but it was we had to get permits in order to do it, and we got the permits, and there was a group of other hikers. We were all doing it at the same time. We didn't know that there were going to be other people. We were like, great, glad there's going to be other people around. So they ended up leaving the bottom of the canyon before us. And so it was great because we had eyes on them. We ended up only having eyes on like the last one of them. And then when we caught up to her, she was lost. So we were like, okay, great. What that means, we're lost too. So that added a couple of hours of looking around.
It wasn't hours.
They were like,
it was like 40 minutes at most.
It felt like a couple of hours, yeah. to my
We were actually headed in the right direction. She confused our directions. She was confused. And then we kind of were like, oh no. And we had to, you know, but that's one of the things they tell you, the rangers tell you, it's like, make sure you're paying attention to where you're coming down because there's nothing marked and you have to like be mindful of that. But yeah, I think that was one of my favorite experiences in a Colorado park because it was so unique. And it's kind of like sand dunes where, yes, there are the mountain hikes, you know, that you can get up into like the alpine areas of sand dunes. But like experiencing sand dunes is so incredibly unique and always different, like because the sand is just shifting. And yeah, I just felt like that was such a unique experience from any other park space. And same thing with the Tamichi route, which is the one route we did in Black Canyon. Just very, very different from another typical park space experience or a typical hike.
Yeah, hiking on sand and trying to describe specific high points and mountains on sand that you know is shifting was definitely a little tricky. And that was one where I had to kind of draw my own route on the map. But that's the cool part about that. You can, as you're coming down, like I made it up to the high dune, and again, sunrise there, because the temperature of the sand is an enormous factor in the summer. And as you're going down, you can see everything. You can say, okay, I think I'll take that ridge as far as I can, and then just bomb down the sand down to there. And you're allowed to freestyle it. The ranger said, you know, it's pretty much choose your own adventure. And then you get down, and hopefully the Medano Creek is flowing. So there's fresh water coming over that sand that's about a couple inches deep. And we went there once when our kids were little, and they just rolled around in it. But this last hike, I did that and kind of made a loop, but so unique. Just and with the lighting on that sand, and then yeah, and hiking and like slide back. I did that one with I put some gaiters on and wasn't sure if it was better with like boots and gaiters and all this protection or if it would have been better just to be barefoot.
I think we had our boots on for the sand, right? Yeah. We hiked with our boots, but we hiked up. Did we hike up to High Dune or Star?
No, we got to Star Dune, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because
we sledded,
yeah, yeah,
and we sledded down and went, I don't know that we have the energy to go back up. So we we just went really far up and then slid all the way down. Okay, so I'm curious, with this incredible collection of hikes in your book, for the listener or the person who is curious enough to go to the shelf of the hopefully local bookstore, and they're looking through and they're seeing, and they do see your book and they do pick it up. What are you hoping that they get from the book and all the information in the book?
What I've always loved about writing for Moon, Moon Travel Guides is the publisher, and they have a series called Moon Outdoors. So what I've always loved from the very first book I wrote for them on Nicaragua was they've always allowed me and encouraged me to have my own voice in the book and to do the research, get all the facts right. You know, I've got a whole mapping team to get the maps right. And, you know, I tracked all of my routes. So we did it. It's pretty meticulous. So someone who picks up this book of Moon Colorado Hiking, they're going to get pretty recent, accurate information, but they're also going to hear my voice a little bit. And, you know, I always loved the idea that I'm running into somebody at the local brewery or breakfast burrito place, and they're asking me, and you know, I have a glow on my face because of the hike I just did, and they ask me what it was, and I'm kind of explaining it to them in that friendly, excited, informative tone, and that's what I'm allowed to do in these hike descriptions. So, and I'm hoping that the book, again, it's these 75 hikes is barely anything. There's just hundreds and hundreds of hikes, and any one of these hikes, well, most of them, some of them are closed loops, but most of these hikes can be extended or shortened in a number of ways. So I try to give information on that. If you want to turn this into even a multi-day thing, you can. This thing just keeps going. And so hopefully the book is a starting point. I think it's a little too big to put in your pocket when you're on the hike. So I think it's more of you're using it to research and get inspired and get ideas. And then you'll probably get your All Trails or your Gaia route. Or actually, now just speaking of that, Cotrex is the best trail app to use in addition to any ones that you like. But in Colorado, Cotrex, Cotrex, is it's the app that the Colorado Parks and Wildlife has created. And it's the data for this, the trail data for it, comes directly from the officials in all of these public areas across Colorado. So I found that to be the most accurate instead of the user-generated ones, which are also helpful, but I would add Cotrex to your for hiking apps in Colorado. But yeah, the book's got, like you said before, it's got some collections. You know, here's the best hikes for hot springs, here's the best hikes fly fishing, here's the best hikes for alpine lakes, for above tree line, for wildlife, for wildflowers. So it gives you some of those groupings to try to plan by. And you know, or you can just like hit a region, see what you think of these ideas, try one of them out. And some of them are even wheelchair accessible or for families when families are visiting town, and some of them some burly adventures with your highest level hiker friends.
This has been Gaze at the National Parks, the podcast, and we're here to remind you to hike early and hike often, and that adventure is always out there.
Gaze at the National Parks was created and is hosted by us,
Dustin Ballard
and Michael Ryan.
To see images from this episode, follow our Instagram at Gaze at the National Parks. To contact us, email us at gazeatthenationalparks@gmail.com. And to find out more about the parks visited on this show, visit our website, gazeatthenationalparks.com. And that's Gaze, G-A-Z-E.
All original artwork featured on Instagram, on our website, and in the Gaze Shop is by me, Michael Ryan.
All original music was written and performed by Dave Seaman and Mariello Klinger, with Sean Sclios on guitar. This episode was edited by me, Dustin Ballard.
We would also like to acknowledge that while recording this episode, that we are on the traditional and stolen lands of the Lenape people, also known as Ocean County, New Jersey.